Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done, outfit stunner, and my skin, I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Seasons change. Why not your gaming tech? Upgrade now during Alienware Summer Sale Event and save on select next-gen Alienware gaming PCs and more. Pair your impressive skills with advanced gaming systems like the Alienware M18 laptop, powered by an Intel Core i9 processor featuring awe-inspiring visuals, liquid cooling, three-dimensional audio with Dolby Atmos, and impressive overclocking potential. Your dream setup, exceptional prices, and free shipping await you for a limited time only at Alienware.com/deals. That's Alienware.com/deals.
Still the substitute. Y'all still got the substitute teacher. Mr. O'Brien will be back tomorrow, but I have one last blooper video I want to show y'all. But before we do that, let's get into this show. Hello, internet. Hello, class. And welcome to season 139, episode 1 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is the podcast where we kick off America's old rotten skull and be like, what the fuck? Okay, all right, is everybody seeing this? Everyone? Okay. Okay, so everyone, okay, we can talk about this? Great. And we say officially off the top, fuck the Koch brothers, fuck Fox News, fuck Rush Limbaugh, fuck Buck Sesk, fuck Buck Sexton. Got tongue-tied on that one. Fuck J.K. Rowling, fuck any motherfucker standing in the way of equality and inclusion. Okay, it's Monday, June 22nd, 2020. My name is Miles Gray, a.k.a. Boom, 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 boom. Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Cove. It to the 19. Okay, that's in reference to probably the second wave of infections that could be happening. And that was, I think, a meme I saw on the internet. Because, man, people are really reckless out here without these masks. And I can only imagine what could happen down the road. But enough about me. I am thrilled to be joined by my co-host from heaven, from on high, from the land of scams. It's the scam goddess herself. Just the fucking genius, Lacey Mosley.
Yes, what's up? It's your girl, Scam Goddess, a.k.a. Oh, I may have got jacked, but at least I'm alive. Scam on me, me, me. Scam on me, me, me. Scam on me.
It's beautiful. Who gave you that one? Was that from you?
I wrote that one too, real quick. My.
You are just a visionary. You're not out here.
I know these vocals are trash, y'all, but I'm warming up.
Don't be humble. People heard the Kiss from a Rose one. I'm pretty sure it already went gold, and it's number 15 on the iTunes charts.
Yeah, Seal is suing me. So that the scam worked out great. He is suing me.
Well, Lacey, we are very honored, thrilled to be joined by somebody I have really fucked with on the internet and Twitter for a long time now. And it's just super dope to have this man on the show now. The brilliant, talented, hilarious comedian, writer, activist, whatever you want to call him, because he's everything. Welcome, Mamadou Njai.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming.
am I supposed to sing?
You got some. If you have, if you want to.
I don't have a song. I just want to say that like the top three songs of the summer got to be the hip hop Harry B. That's I'm gonna be playing that at a party on Juneteenth.
Go,
it's gonna
go.
I'm absolutely gonna be playing that. Second one, You About to Lose Your Job.
Yep.
That lady, shout out to you, gave us a classic, a banger. And then finally, my favorite song of this whole protest cycle is NYPD Suck My Dick. Yeah. Love it. Every single permutation of it. And definitely. Yeah. I'm sorry, Lacey, but it's like right under yours. You better make sure that you be pushing yours to the top of that Billboard chart. Because
I also
NYPD Suck My Dick.
When I want Scam bring up, On Me by Lady Gaga.
Yeah. When people bring up a lot of these songs from the protest, I always have to mention that one, the Detroit techno one with the man on like the bombed out car. No justice, no peace. Fuck these racist ass police. That one is a fucking banger.
Certified Bob. Said.
Yeah, yes. It's always funny to be at protests and see cops starting to like dance a little bit to like what we yelling at them.
Right,
like, this shit kind of goes. It's about us. We fucking
like,
suck.
Whose
however,
streets? Our streets. Y'all street. Okay.
Okay. If y'all say so.
No, Justin, okay. Fuck these racist ass police.
Wait. That's us.
Yeah. Facts though. Facts. Low key facts.
Whose streets? Our streets. Sits with me wrong though sometimes, because sometimes some white people be like, "Whose streets? Our streets." I'm like, "Yours, nigga." Like what?
Like we're in Best Style. Bro, these are definitely not your streets. These specific streets are not yours.
Yeah, no, specifically this one, no, definitely not yours.
That street says Malcolm X. Your streets? Yeah, like, absolutely.
Our
not.
Streets. I'm on the intersection of MLK and Crenshaw. These are our streets.
These are our streets. Whose side are you on?
Yeah. Mamadou, before we get to know you and let our listeners get to know you, we'll just kind of walk through what we're going to talk about in this episode. I think this is a great time to talk about, Mamadou wrote a brilliant piece in Vulture that I really encourage many people to read about navigating Hollywood and the policing of Black voices in the industry. So I think we'll get a little bit of talk from especially you and Lacey because, you guys are know how to Hollywood while Black and kind of get some takes on that, as well as talk about AMC going mask off, then mask on. Or mask off again, depending on if the mask is literal or metaphorical. Yeah. But we'll get into that, as well as conservatives are like, they're acting like they're canceling Jimmy Kimmel for his. There's a lot of weaponizing of the moment I'm seeing from really bad faith actors, especially on the right, who suddenly forget what their entire platform is built on. So we'll talk about that and maybe the reemergence of junk food in the pandemic because we are just trying to comfort ourselves. But first, Mamadou, what's something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
I tried to search if there's any trap remixes of the hip hop Harry beat.
Okay.
I'm DJing a party later and I'm just like, right. Bro, I need people to be out here, moving the goddamn feet to this beat. Because at first when I heard the song, I was like, oh man, this is so annoying. It's probably going to be a meme for this whole summer. But now whenever I hear it, there's like a joy in me and I kind of need to hear Tiki, fuck these niggas up. Go, 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 go. I just need that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that sounds so good. Before, like with Tay Keith. Oh my God. Who's next?
Who's next? Yo, I'm trying to mix it. I DJ too. So like I'm trying to mix it with Uproar by Lil Wayne right now.
Okay.
Because there's the 5-4-3-2, that part, like, and try and mix it with the ghost. And
wow.
I'm going to say, once I get my recording set up figured out, that shit about to go up.
Wait, so you're DJing what, like a Zoom party? Are you like going to blast speakers out into like a block party? What's the setup?
I'm going to a Juneteenth party in Williamsburg. And it's basically just a celebration of Juneteenth.
Like a block party?
It's gonna be a rooftop party, actually.
Oh, cool.
So so I'm just gonna be on the roof, and there is like, yo, play stuff that gets people hype. I'm just like, fam, I've not thought about DJing a party in 3 months,
right.
And now I got to get up there and make these people hype. I'm gonna do my damnedest, and I think that's gonna be the first song.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Is everyone gonna be in masks? Is there gonna be social distancing? Are Negroes gonna be grinding?
Nah. I'm gonna turn that shit off. The moment I'll be, hey.
Leave enough space for the Lord.
Hey.
Right, you gotta play like middle school dance songs.
Yeah, you do.
You can't have no slow grinds going on. Remember Grind With Me?
What, Pretty Ricky?
Oh
my gosh.
Grind
dangerous.
On me. We're like, I guess we have to do what the song says, guys.
What? Is there a Kidz Bop version of that? Because I don't think there could be. Like, what is that shit going to say?
Right.
Of Next, Too Close, a Kidz Bop version of that one?
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many.
Excited.
Oh, God.
Funny. You're making
It's
fun for me.
You're making it fill with blood.
No.
That was good. Gross. So gross.
Wait,
I mean, that's like a scientific version.
What's the one that you do with Sex With Me So Amazing by Rihanna?
Oh, no, that was a meme. That was a meme. I was laughing so hard. What was it? It's like ice cream.
Yeah.
Oh, people are out here trying to watch us figure out a meme in real time. But like,
that's what most podcasts are, though.
Yeah. Right. I'm gonna put it on my Instagram story. I'll find it. It's something raisin so amazing. It's like oatmeal. Yeah. It's something and raisin.
I think it's like ice cream with something raisins. Anyway, it's very funny. Okay.
It's insane. Yo, the Kids Bop Industrial Complex has gone on for too long, and I will have none of it. Listen to the songs.
As a former DJ used to get on the ones and twos himself. What's your setup, Mama? Do you on Serato? Are you lugging around milk crates with the heavy vinyl? What are we talking here? CDJs?
No, I don't have the cardio or the back strength for the vinyls. Right. But I have a Newmark NS7-2 that has two jog wheels that are motorized, and I run Serato. I have a four deck capability, but I run two mostly. And I'm the type of person to be playing. You know, I'll play ABBA and go right into Montel Jordan. I'm that type of DJ.
That's the best kind, when you just like, everything will be good music. There's no like real aesthetic aside from everything is good.
Everything is fun. And I just like to surprise people. Like, I played the Avengers theme at a party once and everybody got really mad at me. And then I mixed it with ASAP Ferg. And... Oh. And then it changed. Everything changed up. It looked invented music. Work.
Oh,
work
okay.
Remix. Yeah, that beat. Woo, boy, yep. It changed the whole vibe up. I put a snippet of it on Twitter once, but I deleted it because I was embarrassed. I was like, this is not who I am.
Mamadou, what is something you think is underrated?
Something I think is underrated. I have to say the 1996 original motion picture Space Jam.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's underrated as a movie, because I think that people always are like, yo, Michael Jordan can't act. I'm like, yeah, but like, Michael Jordan can't act, but he also had to act against like random green things running around. Like, it wasn't even actual people, you know? Like, and I think that, you know, there wasn't that much in the Jordan doc about Space Jam at all, but like,
There was that good 8 minute chunk where it was like, oh, cool, they built that court. And it was mostly about how he was using that time for his career, when I would have settled for a full on Space Jam like featurette behind the scenes.
100%.
Right. I would love to have seen clips behind the scenes of that. Yeah. Also, like, as an actor, acting with there not being stuff there, like, is so hard. So for you to have limited acting experience, and then they're like, now this thing is next to you, and it's flat. Right. Like, that's a lot. He's literally looking at nothing.
Look at this tennis ball and cry.
Yeah. Like, right. Yeah, exactly. And people are out here playing like wild zone defense on him, and he's out here pretending like no out here pretending that like no one is on him. And I think, and it's the same shit with like Star Wars. Like, the prequel movies, like, there's definitely like a renaissance of them now, but like, they're pretty bad. But like, I feel bad. There's like grown ass people acting against nothing. Like, there's Shakespearean actors who went to like, you know, Royal Shakespeare Academy that know how to do that stuff. They're like, it's just a stage. But then there's like Hayden Christensen, who's like, I gotta talk to Jar Jar. Who is this nigga?
Right.
Like, I felt so bad. So
I mean, it ruined Jake Lloyd's entire career, basically.
Fam,
you know.
Yo, listen. That was analog Twitter. You know, it was before Twitter. It was back when you needed to write a letter and say kill yourself to someone. Like, that was back then.
That was mailing in tweets. Yeah.
Exactly. Niggas just be like, oh, 140.
Right.
Send that out.
You pull up to the premiere because you're like, I know he's gonna be there. I'll wait with all the fans. I'm like, man, get the fuck out of here, trash, Jake.
And he's 9 years old, and everyone was like, this is justified. And I'm like, what are you
talking
about?
I never
want
to be so bad that somebody will use their gas money to pull up to heckle me. I never want to be so bad that people are like, nope, I'm taking a day off work. Kids, play order pizza. I gotta go tell Lacey how bad she is in this movie.
Fam,
in person.
Oh my. I can't imagine ever doing anything so bad that like in Hollywood, in a movie where people got to pull up to me at like TJ Maxx and be like, yeah, you better be in the clearance aisle. I hope they didn't pay you anything at all. Like, that shit is mad rude. So, yeah. And like, shout out to Star Wars fandom. Not racist at all. Some of the best people I know.
Yeah. It's like such a mixed bag over there.
Exactly. Yeah, they seem to be pretty nice.
Yeah. What about this, Mamadou? What do you think is something that is overrated?
Something that's overrated. Wow, I'm about to make it kind of hot. I don't know how you guys think about
this.
That's
what we love. It's cold in here. You could turn it up a little bit.
I know it's Juneteenth. This is going to catch me some flack, but I think chocolate is overrated. Oh, the silence? Is that what we're going to do? We're just going to be immature like that? I think chocolate is overrated.
Chocolate. Present your case, my honor.
Yeah.
Thank you, gladly. I just don't think it's as popping as people make it out to be. And I'm not saying that. I think that, there's definitely a chocolate industrial complex in there, too, with, holidays and stuff.
Yeah, fuck big but chocolate, right? There's
other stuff that's also good. And I think
it's
that,
crazy
because
you're, looking at a chocolate woman right now. So it's just
I'm overrated?
Wow.
And that's the thing. I'm curious. I'm not saying that you're not a sweet person. I'm just saying that chocolate has been treated as the sweetest thing in the world for too long. I think it's cool.
Arguably is. I'm flummoxed.
That's the thing. And also, to your point, it arguably isn't. So I don't think it's as popping as it should be. And for me personally, and again, he asked me. I just want to be clear. I just said what I thought.
100%.
You can have
that opinion. I mean, it's just like how Donald Trump stares directly into the sun and tries to fight it, during an eclipse. You can fight anything. So if you want to fight the sun, you can fight the sun,
Wildest part is that I feel like you want me to go to the candy aisle after Valentine's Day and just stare down chocolate now. I will. I'll be like, I dare you to be 50% off. That's not how I am. So
just fucking knock all the Russell Stover's box. Boxes off the shelf and see you fuck out of here.
Yeah, fuck Ferrero Rocher. Who the fuck is
Russell
that?
Russell Stovers needs to just go ahead and keep it to Virgil's.
Wait, so.
And just tell us why. Tell us that they are the last minute chocolate for your side girls and for when you forgot about your wife. And
have
your
any of you had to
good.
Explain the Virgil's thing to anybody? They're like, why are people saying a Virgil, two Virgils? They're like,
people. Yeah.
We've been in bondage for about what, 8 Virgils?
Right.
And people are like, what? It's really funny when so Virgil Abloh only gave 50, never mind,
right.
Yeah. Google it. It's a whole story. Yeah.
It might not be for you, Yeah.
But honestly,
you don't know,
I like
you don't
it.
Go. Right.
Cause I'm finally we're getting some of our own language back that feels like it can't be sold and bought by white folks for money. Cause they love to take, remember Fleek? They destroyed that in a week.
Oh.
Remember For Shizzle? I'm still mad about For Shizzle. We had For Shizzle for less than 48 hours before they were For Shizzle, my nizzle. And I was well, there it goes. Snoop, pack it up. So I'm glad that we keep that and Hotep jokes, because they don't get a Hotep jokes either.
Right. Some people are like, what's a Hotep?
Who is Dr. Umar, and why should I know?
What is a Yakubian?
I will say, though, the funniest shit to me in the world is seeing a Koofy on a white person. When Nancy Pelosi and all of them were taking a knee with the Kente Cloth, I'm like, bro, this ain't even right. There's nothing. You thought you did it. But you didn't.
It was the first time I had gone to Ghana in West Africa. I had met this Canadian man who married a local woman and basically became an elder, like a chief of his area. So he had the designation of Nana. So he was called Nana Dave.
Stop.
And he was like this, yes. And
Dave,
he had this,
Nana
he had
Dave?
This, he had this Ghanaian wife. They are full out Kente, because that's a very Ghanaian thing. They're in Kente cloth. And I saw I was like, are you I'm like, this Canadian, okay. I mean, he's out here. He's building a hotel and trying to do something and live in the community. But it was very jarring when you see white people were like, oh yeah, I had to get out of there and I had to just come to Africa. And I'm like,
whoa. I'd be sick, bro. I'm West African. If I went back to West Africa and some dude named Spencer was running my town, I'd beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, I'm sure.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, I couldn't, but I was like, this is it. And people
fuck you mean, Nana Chad? This is Nana Chad. He runs our village. How did
that's
you come
Nana
over
Bryce.
Here?
That's Nana Taylor. Hey,
yeah,
what's up?
That's wife
that's
Karen.
That's Nana Lakin, and that's Nana Karen. How did they get over here?
And that's Nana Kaylee Hay. I don't. I couldn't do it. I don't. Literally, I think that's the wild thing about Africa is that people don't realize that some people are like, yo, I can't do this America shit, and they're black and they go there, and there's some people who are white can't do this America shit, where things are set up for you to be the most successful. either honestly or not, and you go to Africa and then you somehow find yourself running shit, that's white supremacy.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Woo! Find yourself running shit.
Full circle, like still on that savior behavior, where you're like, I provided jobs. Yeah. I'm that savior behavior. You gotta let it go, baby.
Yeah. Nah, Dave.
I'm not joking. I gotta find this photo. It was like a JCPenney mall portrait of like distinct, like, you know how these portraits look normally of like a village elder or something? Like, it's very stoic and posed. And just to see this dude who was like sunburnt to shit and like with his wife, but very like, we're out here. It's a surreal photo.
Damn. It's also like, it's that wild Olan Mills, like kind of blue, kind of little, little textured background.
Yes.
He's got two African person and a not the opposite African person. And they're just standing there. Oh, God, it's triggering.
And finally, Mamadou, what is a myth? What is something people think is true that you know is false? Or what is something people think is false that you know is actually true?
I think the thing that I think is false that a lot of people assume is true is that Dasani is water.
This feels personal.
I have no idea where this is coming from. That's the crazy part.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Why are all your underovers and myths and stuff like shots at me? Like,
it wasn't a shot.
He didn't even talk about that pepperoni pineapple jalapeno pizza you were eating before we started recording.
I let it rock. I talked to my God. And I was like,
y'all need to get your taste buds up, okay? Because my taste buds are on mansion status. My taste buds definitely don't pay taxes. My taste buds are on that billionaire shit. And y'all need to like come
My taste buds got a PPP loan.
It's also
they definitely shouldn't have.
Yeah,
it's brave of you in an anti-capitalist world to be like, I got billionaire taste buds. They come, they say the guillotine straight for your tongue. It's gonna be a pack up for you. I'm just saying. I think Dasani is lying about being water. I think it's imitation water.
I can't.
And it's not about you. I'm just saying it's bad.
I hate Dasani. Well,
it's all a reference. Okay, so for full disclosure or full transparency, prior to this, Lacey was eating a slice. I said, "What are you eating?" Because I was hungry, and she was having a slice of pepperoni pineapple jalapeno pizza, as well as. Do you want to run down the story of why you were as I look at you right now on this Zoom call, you were drinking from a Dasani bottle.
Is it tap water in the Dasani bottle?
Oh, you're doing that fancy thing where you fill up a Fiji bottle with tap water.
It's Dasani, and it tastes like oppression, and honestly,
how
it's
did you
triggering.
Get that? You didn't buy that, did you?
No, so you know how Coke owns Dasani, and they and we keep telling Coke, like, y'all, we don't want to drink this dirt water. Minerals is dirt. You're not tricking us. Please stop with the dirt water. They're like, we don't care. We're going to keep giving you dirt water because we're packed up with Coke Industries. So you know what? Every time you buy Coca-Cola, you're getting a Dasani. So I ordered from the pizza place, and unfortunately, they're sponsored or they're partnered with Coca-Cola, so they only give you dirt water. And I ordered a couple dirt waters, and now I got to drink them.
Do you like Aquafina better than Dasani?
Absolutely, anything over Dasani. Like, I mean,
because it's the same thing. That's just
Hollywood street water.
That's just Pepsi's version of, you know, like repurified water. So, you know, I don't know if
it's not great either, but I like it better. I'm like a smart water girl. I love a Voss.
Of course, you do with your billionaire taste buds. Smart water, get that ionized.
Get those electrolytes.
Alkaline water. I don't even know what the alkalines are, but whatever. Put it in my veins. I live in LA.
Don't give a fuck. It sounds different than water. So I'll take it.
Right. They're like, it's charged. I'm like, great. I'm going to be charged up. Sounds good.
I just fundamentally don't believe that when I'm drinking water, it needs to convince me it's water while I'm drinking it. And that's how I feel about Dasani. I'm like, it's like when you open the bottle, it goes, I'm water, I swear. And then you drink it and it's not.
And it like hisses, like as if it were like it was pressurized. And
right, it's like
what the fuck?
What's that?
This is what water sounds like, right?
Is that?
Yeah.
I mean, sure, there could be some the sound of water.
Someone had to get in the studio.
They're like the Calm app on the Calm app commercial that's like, take 15 seconds, and it's like rain. It's not even sound like that.
It's funny too. What, like, Dasani has its own rep, like, even as a memed bottle of water. Like, I remember some of the first memes we were seeing out of people going on runs to supermarkets during the pandemic. It was everybody took everything except the Dasani. Like, even people knew it's like, well, I just might as well drink from the tap. But at that point, people are still. Like, it's still there. I don't know. It must be just cheap as fuck for them to make.
Water should not be heavy. It should not be thick.
Also, water should not be sold to people in general. I think
that's actually crazy. Let's go back a step
and be like, nobody should be bottling fucking water and selling it, because we're literally, we're just sucking the fucking life out of different places on earth and be like, here you go, man. Don't worry about the fucking the crop failure over there. Right. You've got water over here now.
But let me act like I haven't bought air in Vegas, so.
But that might be what it is. Maybe Dasani is actually woke because it's not even water.
So oh, not even, right.
Everyone else is terrible.
Right.
And Dasani, which is poison, is actually just bottled poison.
They're like, okay, see, so we're ethical because we take reclaimed sewage water and squeeze all the shit out of it till it grows clear and bottle that.
Purified Dookie water. Yeah.
Mama, do question then.
Yeah.
Dasani water, or a sip from that puddle in front of the hot dog stand
100%
on Broadway.
I would drink that twice before Dasani, and also that random drop of water in New York that falls down out of nowhere.
Like, gallons.
You put me in a Gatorade commercial for that shit.
Yeah.
100%.
Honestly, I was, last time I was in New York in the summer, I was standing on a corner in Chinatown. Did not realize there was a big ass puddle of me in front of me, and a truck just fucking flashed me, and I got water. I got curb water in my mouth, like hot New York curb water in my mouth.
Oh,
I will still take that over Dasani. I was like, it wasn't that bad.
You can taste the culture.
Like
you're like,
spring.
Oh yeah.
Well, at least I know it's asphalt. Like, I'm seeing it. Yeah, great. And whatever random garbage water.
It's like that meme of Pam from The Office where she like, can't tell the difference. It's just Dasani and puddle water. You're like, I don't know the difference.
Yeah.
Like, I guess, yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break to do a couple beer bongs of Dasani and get our heads right. And we'll be right back after that. Zeit Gang, customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source. Connect with customers in line and online. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone. Transform your tablet into a point of sale system. Or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is here to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. I was looking at their website just trying to see, look, how do I find the things that I need as somebody who would potentially have a retail business? And surprisingly, very easy to navigate. They have all the things that you need answers to right there on the website. So definitely check it out. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/TDZ, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TDZ to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/TDZ.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
We'll be right back.
And we are back. And let's just keep it moving right into some stories that were causing some things over the weekend. A full disclosure, we are recording this on Juneteenth. Sure. So, you know, that's just what it is. It's coming out Monday. So we don't know what happened over the weekend in Tulsa. I can only imagine what news that could bring. But we'll be talking about that, obviously, in the next episode. But for now, let's address something that was pretty big at the end of last week, was when AMC theaters, you know, they're about to reopen hundreds of locations on July 15th in this country. And they essentially said, you know what, when we open, we're not going to require patrons to wear masks despite there being a pandemic. And this was the reasoning the CEO of AMC gave. Quote, "We did not want to be drawn into a political controversy. We thought it might be counterproductive if we forced mask wearing on those people who believe strongly that it is not necessary. We think that the vast majority of AMC guests will be wearing masks. When I go to an AMC feature, I will certainly be wearing a mask and leading by example." Okay. When that came out, I think most people were like, what in the holy fuck is going on over there? We are in a pandemic where the numbers are not going down. They're only going up. We're aggressively reopening against the word of every scientist ever, basically,
right?
And anybody with half a brain. And all because what? You got to make sure you get that money for the Tenet premiere?
I mean, that's Chris Nolan, baby. Like, my man's like, yeah, I got to get that. And honestly, you know what? I think coronavirus might actually be super, super racist because that's the only movie that Nolan's made that has a black lead.
Right.
Same tweet. Yeah, I mean, it's wild because, like, listen, I'll say it. I'm a member of AMC Stubbs Club. I'm not trying to flex, just saying it's what I want to do. But I ain't trying to go to even in movie theaters when there's no mask on. I feel like I don't want to be there for other reasons. And I feel like right now, like, this is not the most important thing that we got to be dealing with. Like, why would you ever, like, promote that we are going to allow congregations of people to be doing a thing together and just breathe the same musty old theater 42nd Street air?
Right, because the logic apparently that they're applying is like, well, look, people are wearing masks. They're not talking. They'll all be facing the same direction. Masks will only be off while eating popcorn or having a seat or drink or whatever. And that's like their flimsy ass logic. And then when CNN pressed them further, like, but like, what are you actually doing aside from just saying like, don't wear, like, what else can you say you're doing to keep people safe? And this is what this was the direct answer from the representative from AMC in this interview. Quote, "The things you would expect we're, of course, doing. Social distancing, seat limitations, intensify creating protocols, employee health procedures, contactless ticketing, mobile food and beverage ordering. But we've also invested millions of dollars in high-tech solutions to purifying our theaters. We're buying electrostatic sprayers, HEPA vacuums, MERV 13 ventilation air filters. We're taking the safety and health of our guests and our associates as seriously as we possibly can, except allowing people without masks to enter your fucking theater." What the fuck are y'all even talking about?
Idiots.
Also,
idiots.
Like, y'all don't have no wit. Like, this is actually, like, a petri dish that you're asking people to go to, where there's no windows. Airflow is low.
I don't know if you heard. Electrostatic sprayers, HEPA vacuums, and MERV. Lacey, let me say this one more time. MERV 13. Ventilation air filters, not MERV 12, because remember what happened with those. MERV 13.
Yes, it's wild. I feel like I don't even remember the first 12 MERVs, and here we are on 13. Hopefully, it's gonna save shit. You know what I'm saying? No, I think that it's also like, it's wild. I'm trying to think of like what is the opposite. Like, you know, because if you take your mask down, if you take your mask off to eat some popcorn, coronavirus everywhere, bro. Especially in like a dense, dark room where, like, I'm not an epidemiologist, but if you're in a trap room and there's a high risk coronavirus and everyone's pulling their mask off for a little bit, you don't know who's asymptomatic. You don't know any of this sort of shit. And on top of that, it's like, what are you gonna do? Gonna have like a mask, but then you have like the upside down face shield where like you just dump popcorn and drinks down there, so you don't have to take your mask. Like this.
Oh, keep that idea close to the chest. Do you have a 3D printer?
Oh my god.
Prototype that.
I will. I mean, like, listen, we in New York, I'll fight any Herb who has that on them, but I had to go see Tenet this weekend, so I have this upside down face shield sort of situation.
I mean, it's almost like some Wally shit where we would create ways to just trough product into our down our gullets during some fucking media spectacle. Like, the levels of dystopian like we're approaching with this pandemic, because it's really revealing how, like, the pathology of capitalism too. Like, whole idea of like, look, we got to get this fucking money. I don't give a fuck if people die. Like, we're going, we don't get, and The other thing people need to realize is, like, if you're trusting a corporation to look out for you, you are out of your goddamn mind. I haven't seen one example where I'm like, you know what, that corporation, they came through on protecting people, even though it was detrimental to their bottom line and affected shareholder value. They did the right thing. That's just not going to happen.
Not once. Can I open you guys' third eye for a second?
Okay.
I think AMC is really opening, not just to open their theaters and get money and to stimulate whatever arm of Hollywood they're doing, but also remember the wild cornball Jeff Bezos is trying to buy AMC theaters.
Right.
So I think that this is the only thing that they can do to even have any revenue to prevent this sort of buyout.
Buyout, right. And all the shareholders are like, yep, let's sell.
Exactly. So I think that's something that's like being erased from all of this. But I think it's also like, I don't care about giant corporate mergers. I really care about people. Yeah. And also I mean, I've been in mad AMC theaters in the city and I'm just like, there's all like, we don't know how coronavirus completely fucks the body entirely yet. Mm-hmm. But like every movie theater I've been in, I'm guarantee you some dude is in there masturbating and doing some shit. And it's like, it's already weird shit that's happening. And it's like, bro, like for 3 months, everybody's been home. And now niggas is going to be beating off in movie theaters with masks on. Like, that shit. Like, we have other systemic theater problems that we also got to fix. Right, and now there's fucking coronavirus on top of that. Yeah. Nah.
And okay. What movies are even out that it's like, ooh, let me go risk my life
Tenet.
For this?
Tenet.
I don't know anything else. John what David Washington.
Yeah.
It's a Christopher Nolan movie.
It's a Christopher Nolan, like, super mindfuck, trippy, visual thing.
I'm not dying for Christopher Nolan.
No, and no one is. I don't think that many people are, and I think he's playing himself if he thinks, like, it's people are going to fucking risk their lives to see that shit. Like,
it's like, oh, I may see a Christopher Nolan movie, or I may end up on a ventilator.
I think the difference, like what? I would love to see that movie, but the cost-benefit analysis there, I'm like, oh, fuck no. Getting not in a room up. Full of people who are also dumb as fuck to be like, I'm going to the movies. I'm like, I don't trust. I don't know what you've been up to. But that brings us to this. So this outrage that we are experiencing right now, that got loud enough for AMC to be like, okay, you're right. We won't call it politics, even though this is not a political issue. That's a whole other conversation of how people like politicizing mask wearing. But they're saying like, okay, you know what? Masks on now. This is what the CEO had to say. At AMC Theaters, we think it is absolutely crucial that we listen to our guests. Accordingly, and with the full support of our scientific advisors, we are reversing course and are changing our guest mask policy. Let me just stop right there. The whole thing where they're saying, with the full support of our scientific advisors, they told you to have an optional mask policy to begin with? Like, what? What is the language already, I feel like, betrays what was really going on. Essentially, also, like, trying to be like, yeah, because, you know, we're always having our scientific advisors weigh in on everything.
I was going to say, who the fuck is a fucking AMC scientific advisor, my G? Like, who goes to college and be like, right. Can't wait to work for a mega movie corporation?
They probably do
like
have a scientific advisor. They got to know how much, like, chemical they can put in that fake butter before it legally will kill you.
I think it's just coconut oil, really. But their scientific advisor is probably someone who, like, memorized all the lines from Flubber or some shit.
100%. Just, like, wild hair, the glasses, and the lab coat. They're like, just tell them to wear masks. They're going to be fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
This other thing here. So then they go on. As we reopen theaters, all guests will be required to wear masks. This is the next part. The speed with which AMC moved to revise our mask policies is a reflection of our commitment to the safety and health of our guests.
It would have been more of a commitment if y'all had just started with the masks in the first place, or maybe never opened. Like, how y'all gonna rebrand? Yeah. That's like if you have cars, you make cars and you sell them, and you know they exploding, and you know they exploding before you sell them, and then people start exploding in them, and then you're like, hey guys, we're taking those exploding cars off the market because we see that you're exploding, and we care about you.
And that's always been at the forefront of our ethos as a company.
Absolutely. Exactly.
We know when my granddad got into the exploding car business, I was like, you know what? I got to keep this family tradition going, but I will stop it because of the welfare of our customers.
Right. When y'all said we don't want to explode no more, we heard you.
We heard you.
That really is some like shitty boyfriend logic where you get caught cheating and you're like, well, I'm not cheating anymore. And she's like, well, that's true. Exactly, babe, because that's a testament to how committed I am to you in this relationship.
Yeah.
It's like, but motherfucker,
I know you caught
cheating.
Me 5 minutes ago. I know you caught me on the streets 5 minutes ago.
But I'll knock that shit off.
However, that was 5 minutes ago. And the speed
you know, normally
with which
I wouldn't not
cheating.
Cheat. I wouldn't not, I wouldn't stop cheating for nobody.
Right.
You know? But you.
But I'm committed to this. This relationship, the sanctity of it. The whole thing just reeks of total bullshit.
100%.
It's just really weird, man, because these, like, there's like another level of gaslighting that's happening from capitalist, like the capitalist, you know, business owning class, which is forcing people to work and consume again as if there isn't a pandemic. Like all these forced openings, like I think bars were opening over the weekend in LA. I wouldn't know because I'm still looking at like, is there,
oh, they open.
Are the numbers going down? Yeah. It's like, what the fuck are people doing? But they're not realizing that. Even though a mayor might say, hey, we're reopening the town, it's not because you are safe. It's because, like, the Chamber of Commerce and other donors and people who own business and stuff are in their ears lobbying them to get them to reopen. Like, this is a lobbying effort. This isn't just some, this isn't your local leader saying, like, all right, guys, I think you've been safe and I think we're ready. No, they're under pressure from these people who are like, I need my fucking money, bro. And if you think I'm going to give to your campaign, you're out your fucking head. Start opening these fucking restaurants and shit. It's really dark and cynical.
Also, people have to remember, like, if you're going out to these restaurants or you're risking it because you're like, oh, it'll probably be okay, just know you're out there with the most reckless people you've ever met in your life. Like, because anybody who's out early disregarding everything that's happening in the news, I bet you those people have been out the entire time. There's a good chance that they have, like, met up with so many different people. Like, you are out with the most reckless people you've ever met.
Yeah.
And also, like, and guess what? You one of them motherfuckers too. You there. Like, come on, bro. This, if we all realize, oh, maybe I'm wilding and just sat down, you'd be fine.
Yeah. I mean, you look, if you could be outdoors, that's one thing, because it seems like mask wearing did help a lot during a lot of these protests, which is beneficial. But that's in the context of outside. And I know there are, I've read plenty of takes on the right. They're like, oh, really? People are upset about bars? But look at this. Look at all these people. I don't see social distancing there. Without completely, like, actually genuinely, you know, pointing to the fact that this isn't about going to see a fucking movie, okay? This
is exactly.
The stakes are fucking not even close to being the same. But
it's
wild.
It's because, like, the sooner that you realize that everything's connected to, like, whiteness, money, and optics, everything starts becoming so much more clear. Because, like, and honestly, like, you know, they'll be like, look at these people doing brunch. Things are good. But you're not going to follow up with them in 2 weeks when they're on ventilators. Mar 13 air ventilators.
Yeah.
So it's wild.
So we'll see, you know, how that goes. I just, you know, please, everybody listening, just because, look at just the numbers, man. If the numbers aren't going down, we're not doing it. We're not doing what we had to do.
Then you don't know how to be in the streets.
Yeah. Speaking of whiteness and optics and media narratives and Hollywood, Mamadou, you wrote a piece in Vulture that is really, really fantastic, sort of talking about a film that you were trying to get out and its evolution and how you were trying to tell a story and how you came to realize whether or not an audience would accept it, whether or not the gatekeepers that allow stories like this to be platformed would accept it. And I don't know, I just want to, you know, let you, I feel like this is a great time to talk about Hollywooding while Black. And I think in your instance, like for you as a creator trying to get a message out and then watching how that gets distorted along the way. So do you kind of want to just sort of break down what happened?
Yeah. So, so I've been doing, like, you know, protests and stuff for a long time. And I think that, you know, every Black person that we know, their entire life has been mired with this sort of, like, smog of police violence and racism from that. So in 2016, after the deaths of Philando Castile and Alton Sterling, I started working on a short film and I started crowdfunding for it called Hashtag. And it was supposed to be sort of a meta narrative on the cyclical nature of things, because I was, especially on social media, you really notice that we turn our eyes to it, then we turn away. And it keeps happening almost exactly the same way. And I think that, you know, we all had our great, I think, not we all, but I feel like a lot of the internet that doesn't have access to this sort of narrative because they're not tied to it was forced to look at, like, the Trayvon Martin story. So things have slowly gotten woker and woker on Twitter. But I made this short film and it took a lot out of me, mostly because I was getting advice from a lot of different people. I was taking it in different directions and I went to different execs. I went to different production companies that I wanted help from it. And it felt very much like this, like, grand gaslighting of, like, yo, this idea is, it felt like you could feel the money behind it. It's not in right now. It's not going to pop. You could hear the gaslighting from the ideas, like, oh yeah, what you're talking about is, like, definitely an important topic, but, like, we don't do that here. And I could tell from the people that I was talking to that it, like, it made them uncomfortable, but not uncomfortable enough to change anything about themselves and stuff.
Right.
And I finally did make the short film in 2018 with Quincy Ledbetter and Michelle Francesca Thomas. And when I made the short film, I realized that throughout the entire time I was making it, more people were dying and more people were doing the same thing that I was like trying to put in this movie. And yeah, it really broke me. It really made me feel insane because I was like, I feel crazy. And I know a lot of Black people do because we just spend so much of our time being gaslit to our own experiences by people at all levels of what we're doing, especially in Hollywood and in comedy and stuff. So I... during all of this, you know, you said that we were talking about Twitter, like, I just got mad this time. I was just like, yo, stop pretending that you don't see this. And, like, the fatigue and, like, the, oh, well, we're going to be performatively woke and then we're going to go away from it. Whereas, like, Black people can't turn their heads away. Like, we only turn our heads into more trauma. And last 3 weeks have been that. So, I made the short film and then I was like, I'm not going to release this, mostly because I think that, like, with Black people who die from police violence, they are survived by us and we fight for them. But that was a movie where it's literally called hashtag was going to trend and my body was on the chopping block trying to make a point. And I was going to be alive to see the ain't shit motherfuckers that I have to navigate every single day. So rather than do that and then ruin my own mental health with that, I was like, I'm not going to release this. That being said, a lot of people have seen it and a lot of people have shared it. It's something that, you know, when I wrote the article, she's like, I want to see it. And I was like, yeah, because I can't be out here like, I'm writing something about something that's never happened, that doesn't exist. So you can't do that. So I was like, you can see it. And they thank you, Meg Wright, for giving me the platform for that. But she also just like she said it moved her. And, you know, she understood the point that I was trying to make. And it ties into so much of like the sort of emotional policing that Black people got to go through in Hollywood, whether it be tone policing, emotional policing, body policing. And it doesn't. And with the moment talking about cops again, I was like, we have to include all of it. Like, we have to include all the conversations. And I'm not the most radical person. I know many more women of color who are much more specifically Black women who are much more radical than I was that I am. But just the police and prison abolition movement is moving past this sort of like cyclical nature. Like, we need to completely fuck this shit up. And I want that sort of energy to come towards policing of Black expression in Hollywood. It's a very different beast because no white person thinks that they're bad.
Right. And also, like, they think that they're giving us opportunities, but they don't understand that real opportunity lies within the power construct in Hollywood. So I shouldn't be allowed to make something that is specifically Black and then have white people gaze upon it and tell me why it doesn't work. It's like sometimes you just have to trust that you don't know what you're talking about. And I think that's the biggest thing that we have to work with Hollywood execs is like, there has to come a moment where you're like, I don't know every experience. Like, you're not going to see me read, you know, a Native person script or read a script from someone who's from Seoul or from, you know, Amsterdam and be like, you know, I'm not really understanding this food stuff y'all talking about. Like, you need to take that out. Maybe we could put in, I don't know, Black people food, you know, like, or I don't know, like this love interest. Could they be white?
I know this it's in Seoul, Korea. So what about some Seoul food?
Seoul food.
I know it's in Seoul, Korea, but Seoul food and also soulful people. Could these Koreans be the Black ones?
But that's what happens. Like, just what you're saying, Mama, with your piece, right? I haven't seen it yet. But the way you were describing sort of this Groundhog's Day effect of this man getting killed by the police and having to relive it and try and figure out how they're going to actually survive this interaction. And I think that puts so literally what the Black experience is that essentially it's like what was happening pre-George Floyd, where it was something so real and shocking to someone's senses that they're like, ooh, that's like kind of hot, you know, like that's, but rather than acknowledging, like, will you allow us to actually explain to you what this is? This isn't something meant to be incendiary or antagonistic, because our existences are just tainted with these kinds of things. So what the fuck is this? And to hear that someone was like even trying to, an executive said, tried to get you to both sides this narrative?
Yeah, it was very annoying. I was just like, bro, like, I don't give a fuck about the cop narrative. Guess what? They have a stranglehold on their own fucking narrative. And they, whenever anything comes out about them, they're like, can you take out the part about the brutality? Thank you. Right. That's the thing. Like, Black people do not have control of their own narrative in the same way that white people and cops have. And I'm not saying that every white person is a cop, or am I? But I'm just saying that there is a power structure in Hollywood, as Lacey was saying, that doesn't allow for Black people to express themselves the way they want to. It has to be put through a white filter of palatability. Right. And that extends to all people of color, queer people, like, and it's difficult and it's dangerous to do that, because if we don't have control of our own narrative, then things that are essential need to get cut out. And even in this article, like, shout out Meg, I was just like fighting for, like, no, these lines need to come in because someone needs to say this. Like, I think that people in the last 40 years, sort of this turn towards Blackness being the cool thing that we can, like, all engage in, that it's become so mainstream that Black people are now being plucked away from their own narratives and replaced with white people who are doing Black sense and, you know, nigga fishing on Instagram and stuff like that, like that sort of stuff. So it's so expansive and it's so connected to so many different other systems in Hollywood. And it all comes down to, like, this sort of, like, suffocating cloud of whiteness that is around everything. And I think what really made me break was one girl asking me, where's hashtag? Like, in a very, like, I need it now sort of
thing. Oh, because you did a GoFundMe like Kickstarter thing? Right.
Exactly. And I totally got it. I understood where she was coming from because, I mean, that's how I am. I try to see both sides of that sort of situation, often too much. But I try to see both sides of that. But what it really felt like, and I had to be honest about how I felt, was like, it feels like you're just like, yo, where's this movie about police trauma that I put some money into? And she's right. Like, you put some money into it, but, like, this is really fucking me up. And also, every 3 months, someone else is dying, and I watch my movie happen in real life. And you watch my movie happen in real life, and you do nothing about changes. It. Yeah. So why would I put something out with me in it and hurt my own mental health and see you do the same thing you do with real dead people and keep it going? And it really did break me. So I just immediately, I was like, we got to start looking at Hollywood holistically, everything from execs down to crafty. How are we putting Black people into this?
Right. And also the idea of, like, re-traumatizing Black people, because we understand what the reality is. Yeah. So when we see these films, it's like, yep. But then at a certain point, it starts to really weigh down on people, because how many times do you have to see these really fucked up versions of life until, you know, shit starts clicking? And I guess we're beginning there, but that's why I think we have to really seize this moment. I think a lot of people are. Yeah. And to your point is, like, it can't just be offerings to Black creators, writers, or whatever, to have like table scraps or to be, like, invited to the table. Motherfuckers need to give up their seats at the table.
Exactly. Right.
You know what I mean? Because that's the issue. And I think that's really, I think, another issue of, like, how can we really guarantee that there is going to be proper representation in these kinds of things, when already we're seeing corporations be like, hey, we'll be back with more on what we will do on Black Lives Matter. More to come. More to come. Yeah, but, like, we got to be real. This is just another form of gaslighting until we actually see what is going to happen. Mm-hmm, I don't need more to come. I need you to say, you know what? Like, we've changed our head of development, is now, like, a queer Black person, whatever, anything. And just be like, this person is now doing this. Someone who is gatekeeping is now, we're actually expanding the perspective of people who are going to actually be like, this could be something good, rather than a very homogeneous lens or filter that everything is put through in this decision-making process.
Right. Yeah, and absolutely. That's why you're seeing gatekeepers. For a long time, what they did, you know, and called diversity and expansion was tokenism, where they would take on Black creatives and then they take their art and they remove all of the passion and the truth from it so that they can make it palatable to white audiences. And you don't see that in anybody else's art, like any other, like, white folks' art. Like, when you're watching white people's piece, if you're watching Wes Anderson, you're getting the, you know, the alabaster of the alabaster, the creme de la creme. You know what I mean? No one's saying, like, Wes, too many colors. Wes, too many tiny chairs, you know.
Why,
like,
is every shot so symmetrical?
Right. Whatever Wes feels his whiteness needs to express, he's allowed to do that. However, if it's brown and Black folks, then it's like, well, we don't get this reference. Or, I mean, Gerard Carmichael left the Carmichael Show because they wouldn't let him release episodes about police brutality and about stuff that he really wanted to talk about. Then they just kept censoring him. And I've experienced that on shows that I was on, where we were talking about, I was the one Black girl in a friend group, and we were talking about the police, and they immediately are way more aggressive to me in the scene. And the white execs read it and we're like, we don't understand why this Black girl's character, why would the cops be so aggressive towards her? And we were like, because she's she's black. Like, yo. And they're like, no, but the cop has no reason to do that. It's like they still think that way and they put it on us. And it's like, come on now, you've seen all these videos of us dying. And white people love a slave movie. They love a good old black trauma porn that they can just like skirt up and down the Oscars.
Or some with some good old savior behavior.
Yeah, savior behavior, like you said. And I don't even watch those things anymore. And it's kind of like that meme of the girl who's drinking the soda and she's like, when I see an ad for a black trauma porn movie, I'm not interested. When I see an audition, I'm like, maybe I gotta go get my Lupita on. I don't want to, but that's the industry that I live in. Those are the choices that I have. I gotta go get beat on and like a slave so I can get me some clout.
I mean, sad. You know, it is so sad because like I think that like, you know, we all make the jokes about like white people was asking us, did you see Get Out? And we gotta ask them, did you see it? Because it feels like you're not changing anything about your behavior to us based on that. And it is that, and I think it's like what's even more insidious, I think that like what people don't really fully realize about what needs to change in Hollywood is the thing that we're learning, we know about world history. Everything in world history is people refusing to give up power, and people are like, oh, bet no power, okay, cool, we taking everything, your head's mine, G, like that's what it is. And I think in Hollywood is like, it doesn't need to be a violent transfer of power. It literally is like, we're giving you this power. And I think that it can't just be the one black person in the room. It can't be just two. Because you need to, and as a former teacher, you need to build scaffolding, something to like hold on to so that like they can understand, like we can feel like we can communicate with each other and have some sort of power. And I think that is a fear that a lot of white Republicans have in this world and a lot of white people on the right, but also on the left. It's like there's a lot of people who angle themselves to be at the front of black movements who are white allies. And I'm like, why are you at the front? Unless you're depending me from a cop at a protest, it's okay to not be the forefront of it. And I know plenty of people who may not think of it that way, but that's how we perceive it. But then on top of that, there's a culture of silence where we're not allowed to talk about this stuff because we know it could be our career. And I think that in this moment, so many people are talking about it because we have so much frustration that is from everything. Also, we've all been cooped up for like 3 months. But like, there's so much frustration from everything. And, you know, media pieces like 13th and When They See Us, shout out Ava, and Watchmen. Like, these are all stories that black people really know and white people don't. And I think that's to put it in improv terms, shout out UCB, but not really. we don't have the same base reality. And we're coming into a scene where the white base reality is supposed to be the subjective truth, but we know it's been whitewashed and spun to be something else. And even in the movies that you say, oh, this is about black people, like what's the movie? Hidden Figures. Then my man was breaking down that bathroom sign. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. That nigga did not knock down no goddamn. He's like, hey, nigga, go to the bathroom over there. That's how it went down. It's like, it's not, and that's the stuff. It's like, there's still this positioning of like, the framing of white goodness and redemption and innocence, where in reality, we know that's not how it is historically. And the fact that like people can just post a black square and be quiet, that brought out everyone's frustration and anger because we on the inside know that this is not how it is.
Yeah.
And we've had to hold it in because if we let that shit out, it's a pack up for our life, our career. And there's an insidiousness to like the way that, you know, whiteness makes blackness threatening at the drop of a hat.
Smallest instance.
And that is policing. That's the tone policing block that I was talking about. That is all that stuff. And like even with J. Cole, No Name, like it's coming from inside the house too. Like that sort of white supremacist thought is still like, oh yeah, black woman, quiet your shit down. Like there's so much that needs to be unpacked and undone. I think that's the beauty of like what's coming out of this movement, not just for Hollywood, but for the world, about, you know, police abolishment and prison abolishment, because it's like we need to like strip this shit and we need to like fix things. But it requires us all to like decenter ourselves and center equity in a certain way. White people are not good at that. They're just like, what do you need me to do? Money? Cool. And that, we need infrastructure. We need power. Right. And that requires people who get into these positions. The, you know, people are doing it, like the Issa Rae's, the Donald Glovers, the Avas, who are doing these things to like pay it forward and recenter the people who are at the most vulnerable within our own black community as well. And that is something that has to start up at ad execs and development execs, go to showrunners, to writers' assistants, to assistants, to crafty.
And that's to trickle down to PAs. Yep, crafty hair and makeup.
All the way down.
in The Hollywood Reporter before COVID hit, in the Oscars edition, talking about the disparities when it comes to people who even know how to do black makeup and hair. Like, I don't think white people realize that we get up every single day and we just face abuse every day. And we're quiet because we're like, well, these Con Edison don't care that this white lady was mean to me, so I'm just going to have to take it on the chin because I got to pay my fucking bills. And they don't get that. And, you know, it was super disappointing to me to, in LA 706, I'm going to put y'all on blast again, to hear from the 706, and this is not the people of color who work within 706. Shout out to y'all because y'all are fighting so hard to get jobs, and it's such a, I know it's a hard space. But I heard that people in the meetings read The Hollywood Reporter and wanted to boycott The Hollywood Reporter and were talking about all the great things that they were doing for black women and hair and makeup and the programs that they had. And I said, so if this is what you're, the problem you have, right? I'm an actress. I work. I'm not famous at this moment, but I'm employed. And but you have Taraji P. Henson. You have Gabrielle Union. You have Natasha Rothwell. You have actresses who have been in the game for decades telling you the same thing. And instead of being like, wow, if they're still saying it's a problem, maybe we aren't doing enough, or maybe what we're doing isn't working. But instead, there's that white fragility that hops in, that centers yourself and makes it all about you and how you feel when people are hurting. And that's like if you went to the doctor and you're like, doctor, like, I'm bleeding. The doctor's like, okay, that's not my fault. So well, whose fault? So whose fault is it that you're bleeding? Why you get stabbed? Why you out here running into knives? I didn't run the knife into you. It's like, help me. I'm asking you to help me, not to make it about you.
Yeah, that's the ugly part where it's just like you pull up somewhere and it's the meme. Again, I keep talking to memes. I'm sorry. My brain is fundamentally broken by the internet.
2020.
But it's that shit where Eric Andre's shooting Hannibal and be like, why would you make me do that? And I'm like, no, it don't gotta be this way. I literally just need you to like change these things. And one thing that got taken out of the article for word count, because it was near 3,000. because I had so much to say. There's just so much to unpack. But like, I needed to make it a cohesive story. Shout out editors. Is that like you can't arrive like 500 years late to class and then be like, all right, page one, Black Lives Matter. Like you gotta come in and realize that you are not leading the movement. You are contributing to it. And I think that there's a skewing in our media, the way that the world looks at like the different oppressions, that it seems like things are one to one. Whereas everything is so complicated. It's not just men versus women. It's not just black men, white women. It's not white women, black. It's all of the things connected. And if you start intersecting it all the way down the bottom and you start realizing who's the least protected. And we were talking about this the other day, Lacey and I, just like, specifically, it's trickle-down justice. It's just trickle-down justice. And it's like, we're going to break the glass ceiling. We're going to come back and get you. Has that happened? Like, at the moment that black white people are like, well, I'm tapped out. I donated to 15 fucking organizations.
I have allyship.
I'm exhausted. Yeah, exactly. Oh, that shit. And I talk about it all the time. Race time continuum. You see it. You're like, oh, my God, I'm so upset. What are we going to do? All right, we fixed it. And then you go right back down that little curve.
Race time continuum. Damn.
The race time continuum. Listen, I think, and that's the thing. The only reason that I have any sort of like quotable memes and stuff like that, that I'm good at talking about this, is that I've done this my entire life, and I've tried to explain it in every way to people who are not trying to change. And now we're not going to let you. And I think that it starts with, you know, the safety of black people in Hollywood, and that requires the scaffolding at all different levels. But then it also comes with like the rejection of white mediocrity in the face of black people who work their entire goddamn lives to have the most stacked IMDb, the most stacked credits, the most stacked like writing samples, and they pull up and they're like, oh yeah, this is Keith from Costco. You might have written on 15 different Oscar award nominated movies, but we just found him and he was, you know, buying.
He was homies Costco. With the showrunner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And he was in Costco at the time. Yeah,
he actually helped our showrunner like load a bunch of dog food into his car.
Exactly.
And he made a funny dog food joke and the guy was like, hey, you want to be in a writer's room?
Exactly.
And that's not to say that there aren't many talented white writers, but what you guys have to understand is, and this is where like I find myself trying to incentivize white folks, because I just know that I wish they had more empathy in their hearts, but many, it's just about them. So I'm like, look, you can sleep better if you do these things for black people, and then you know you're not the bad guy. You just keep doing those things, and thank you so much. Or like white folks who've worked really hard for the things that they have. It's not that we don't know you exist. The issue is that you don't realize, like, for as much as you've ever had to work, we've had to work harder. And it's not, but we're not saying that to say that we're better than you. We're saying that to say that said, you got to work and you didn't have to get followed home by the police. You got to work and you didn't have to quietly deal with your first AD putting his hands on you on set. You got to work, and when you spoke up and said that, hey, I'm getting sick, they didn't make you work in the freaking woods until you had to go to the hospital. You got to work and you didn't have to, you know what I mean? And these are my personal experiences that I just listed off in Hollywood, where like people, I've had white men putting their hands on me to the point where I had to be like, please stop. And I was the supposedly the most important actress there, number one on the call sheet.
Right. And like, they're like, oh, she's kind of difficult, huh?
I had an AD break his fall on me on set, tripped and grabbed me to break his fall. Could you imagine being on a set where anybody worked on that set and Nicole Kidman or any other delicate white woman, and then you saw like a gaff or like, whoop, I'm tripping. Let me grab on to Nicole so I can, so I don't fall to the ground. What?
Oh, man. Yeah.
What? So just know, like, this is what we're talking about. We're not trying to take away from the fact that you've worked hard for the things that you own, but do know that we are surviving one every day that we get up, and then we're doing twice, three times as much work just to be considered for a tokenized position.
Yeah.
And on top of that, just as people, the most vulnerable in the world that feel like we don't have even access to these stories. Because when they're like, all right, we want to make this movie about how, you know, we're going to have it. It's going to be a parallel universe. It's going to be you and Nicole Kidman, and this AD is going to fall on you. And then they'll somehow like erase you from the story. They'll somehow like, you know, somehow it was Lacey, but now they've made that person shades, 14 shades lighter. And they're actually being played by Lena Dunham.
Scarlett Johansson.
Like, exactly. So, you know, we know our roster. You know what I'm saying? So it's like there's this sort of like keep calm and carry on mentality, not to get UK, but like it is this racism where it's like, white people are like, all right, it's all good and like, well, we're going to fight racism until you got to like look within. And I think that we all need to look within to, if we want to make any sort of transformative change in Hollywood, it requires an internal look, something that like black people have had to do to survive, because we need to talk. I need to talk to Lacey to tell her like, this is what happened. So I don't feel crazy. It is. And I think that, you know, I never want to like, you know, co-opt abuse language, but these are power dynamics and they intersect once you talk about race and gender and, you know, sexual orientation, gender expression. It's like, it's so very layered and complicated, and it can't just be a post on Twitter. It can't be a post on, because like people have been out here posting on Twitter, posting on Instagram, getting dragged. Whole organizations being like, we stand for Black Lives Matter, and all the black people be like, this you? And it's like every single time that happens, I'm like, we know this is exactly what it is every single fucking time. It's like people want to look good rather than do good. And I think that when it comes to allyship, we need to do the good and we need the receipts, because you know that black people got theirs against you. And I think that like we also need to allow people to grow and change. I'm a teacher, so like, you know, like I said in the article, if I'm getting sick of people, you know my patience is run dry. Yeah. I taught 12-year-olds, man. Yeah, them niggas was roasting my... Shout out to y'all. Shout out Jamiel. Roasting me. So it's like, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. And if I'm tired, then I know that somebody has to deal with the intersection of being a woman like Lacey also is exhausted. And somebody who's queer is definitely exhausted. Somebody who's fat in this industry too, fucking exhausted. Somebody who's not cis. Like, it's like... there's so many layers, and it requires not centering of just a group, but centering of just like an equity mind. And I think that there's a lot of white people who walk into a room and they see a bunch of white people and they say they don't see anything wrong.
Yeah.
And that is a problem.
True words. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. Celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection. Obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
An October morning in a quiet suburb in a town in Scotland. A man is walking his dog when suddenly shots are fired from a car. The man falls to the ground and the car speeds off. An ordinary residential area, but extraordinary things happen in ordinary places.
The instinct right away was it was a political thing.
We're talking about Russian-trained, high-ranking officer in the Secret Service.
An Assassin Comes to Town, a six-part podcast. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Let's just really quick, I just want to point out to the this piece in the New York Times from like last week. The author of Salt, Sugar, Fat, the book was like fantastic. It was basically talking about like the systematic poisoning of us through all these processed foods we eat and these combinations that are having just the worst effects on our health, but are being like, yo, but this is how we get people to buy it because it tastes good and yeah, fuck the health effects. So I'm not going to fault his tone as he like talks about how like excited food makers are, but it is kind of funny. So it seems like right now a lot of the processed food industry is basically like, oh shit, like we're back. Like the pandemic has brought the just comfort food, junk food eating, wave right back. And a lot of people, I think myself included, I was being very like, nah, I don't need to eat this shit. I don't need to eat just like straight up sugar stuff. Like I can be a little more mindful to keep my internal processes running optimally. But now a lot of people, you know, in the pandemic, we're in our homes. We are basically finding out that like we like to snack more. Like, it's just what it is. We're grazing now. And basically now there's a lot of these food makers saying like, holy shit, like snacking has come back. Like snacking is like the wave right now. But I think depending on how you are, I think I find myself in the category of like eating junk food just purely to be comfortable. That's it. Like right now I find myself being like, hey, dude, I need fucking ice cream. I need to eat a whole sleeve of Oreos like in one go just because at times it helps with other things. But then I think the other thing is like a lot of people don't have like the knowledge, wealth or discipline to stay on a healthy diet. So I don't know how anyone could be like expected to consider those things, especially when right now we're kind of like in this slow motion societal collapse. But apparently people are loving canned soup right now.
Soup? They're not loving it. Your life is over
if you like canned soup right now.
This canned soup slaps Progresso. Oh my God.
I think it is, obviously, because it's the easiest shit to make. You know what I mean?
Good, baby. I think they're jumping the gun a bit. I think that's like people being like, masks are back, baby. Everybody wants PPE. Everyone's going to wear PPE for the next 10, 20 years, baby. Right. Like, you have to, I think they need to realize the time that we're in because canned soup don't slap. And people were getting it because it doesn't expire and they didn't know how long it would be until their next grocery store trip. So it's kind of wild to me that people are like extracting that from the narrative and being like, we got them where we want them, hooked again.
It's like, General Mills, their cereals jump like 30% and like waffles. And they're like, oh, here we go.
Damn, I should have got stock in Eggo. Damn it.
Oh, 100%. Can you imagine Woden? Just coming up off the Eggo dollars? You get those Eggo checks in the mail?
Nobody's letting go right now.
Oh, no, niggas. Hey, let go my motherfucking Eggo. Like, you be out here trying to pay big coronavirus to get your Eggo money to stay up. Like, like Soup is wild to me because I'm like, yo, there's no like, okay, I'm not gonna slander Soup. I'm a ally to the Soup community.
Okay,
I want to be clear. I'm just saying that like there is no way that someone looks at those numbers and goes like, Soup is in. We got to get this Soup shit going. There's like listen, it's like the scientists at the AMC. Like there's nobody looking at those numbers and saying that like Soup is what is in. And I don't know. Right. I don't also to say that it's in. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like. Cancer, like a survival food is not in. A survival food means that we're trying to survive. That is all that is.
Dry spaghetti, know. Man. We're back.
We're back. Like, Chef Boyardee, Chef Boyardee yeah. putting on his hat is like, I swore I'd retire, but guess I'm back in the game now.
Like, all that kitschy astronaut food. They're like, everybody buying our camping food.
Let's astronaut ice cream. Yeah, the other thing is, but a lot of people, like 6 in 10 adults in this other survey were cooking a lot of their meals from scratch, which is really interesting. So I think some people took the time to just be like, I got so much time, like, oh shit, carrots are cheap. Okay, maybe I can do something with this. But the other thing that's really interesting is like how the sort of pendulum broke down in different ways. One of the biggest things was for people who said, like 1 in 4 people said they were eating more salty and sugary snacks. And this like category of people was dominated by the 18 to 29 demographic, which like back in 2014 were the same people who were like, oh, I'm off this shit. Like I'm off this processed food. So we've had to come. It's interesting to see that just in these times, like, yeah, there is a certain amount that we just it's comfortable to maybe do less work to cook and just eat something that reminds us of childhood when we didn't know about, you know, how right, deep systemic racism was or a pandemic or capitalism.
We're all stressed. Yeah. And I feel like if a Scooby-Doo snacks box could talk, it'd be like, ah, I see you, bitch, coming crawling back. Where's your avocado toast now, millennial? Right,
right. I dare you. What's the wildest snack like journey you've gone on in this pandemic, like in terms of volume? I ate 1.5 pints of ice cream in one sitting.
I definitely had a Haagen-Dazs moment. And I'm not a snacker. Like, I'll eat once a day, which is very trifling.
Oh, you do that big, one big meal? You're one of those?
One big kill, honey.
Yeah.
It's not working for me.
One big pizza.
Right. One big pizza, one big ice cream. One big wine. We're having one big wine, okay?
Having big wine tonight.
Allison Roman who?
Yeah.
But listen, I drink my wine out of a flower vase. What of it?
Ooh, okay.
No.
I like that.
Wow. I didn't know Goop.com had a black division. Wow.
Right.
They do. Right. Gwyneth is now, she's like, this is what my vagina tastes like.
Oh, it's called Goop.
Goop. It tastes like Chardonnay, guys. Gooped. Which is what you would imagine it would taste like.
Oh, God.
No, but I think, I bought the miniature Haagen-Dazs because I got to the point where I was like, okay, Lace. You can't eat 1.5 pints of ice cream. Because I actually kind of did the same thing that you did, Miles. I'm trying to think if there was anything. Oh, you know what I did? I got peanut butter, honey, and the chunky style peanut butter. I microwaved it. And then I put a little salt on top. And I ate that with a spoon.
Whoa. Wait, do you smoke weed? Not all the time. That's
smoking
like
smoking that gas, smoking that gas.
Fucking hot bowl of honey peanut butter.
Pass that fucking loud.
God damn.
Y'all
sounds like some shit like when I was in college, my roommate is in the kitchen or something like, hey, what you making, man? Hey, can I get some of that?
You are judging me.
No, I like it. I fuck with the creativity.
I will yield the rest of my time if it means Lacey makes that right now and eats it and tells us dead ass with her chest that shit is delicious.
Right.
It was good.
It wasn't too hot. It was just like, it was just nice and loose. So like you could take.
Yeah, it was loose. Okay. And it had the little salt to it and had the honey aspect. It was savory. It was sweet. It was, and I ate it out of a coffee mug.
All right. What about you, Mamadou?
I yield my time. What the fuck? Like, what's going on with you, Lacey? Like. Nah, first off, I think what's wild is that, like, pandemic hit. First few weeks, good. Still working out, got a good schedule going. I'm out here, like, cooking. I'll make a pasta, I'll make rice, I make West African food, like yassa and stuff like that. And I was doing that, and then Ramadan hit. And Ramadan was, like, good for your bank account, because you're like, you can't buy a lot. You can eat once a day, so, like, that's good. But then it just clapped me, because I'm back to eating, like, once a day or doing the snacking thing that you're talking about. And, of course, everything that's going on, you know, protests, sort of this trauma.
Yeah.
I'm having a stressful reaction, and I'm not eating, and I'm trying to remember to do that.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm out here, like, eating like little like things from bodegas of watermelon. I got pretzels. I'll get like chips and salsa a lot, and I'll eat that. I did not eat 1.5 pints of ice cream, but I keep buying the same strawberry cheesecake ice cream from Ben and Jerry's, our woke allies in the dairy revolution.
There you go.
And like, yeah, I've been just like trying to drink a lot of water and stuff. Like most of my plans for eating have been budgetary as opposed to like, you know, I just need a snack. And even now I'm looking over here, I got my little snack, little like non-perishable corner. And it's like I keep forgetting to eat, so I'm never like making a meal. Or as Lacey knows, I'll be like, she'd be like, "Hey, what's going on?" Like, oh. And it's like, "Did you eat?" And I'm like, "Huh, that's right, I didn't eat all day." And that's why I'm tired. Because you know you'll be tired. And you'll be like, "Why am I tired?" And you're like, "Huh."
I love cereal ice cream. There's one from Cool House that's just like cereal milk. I was as an ice cream.
Ooh.
And it fucks me
up. Is it Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
No, it's like just, it's like as if it were the bottom of a bowl of Frosted Flakes.
Yo.
Except it's ice cream.
Yo, that's
I killed that. I killed that. Look, I faced a blunt and I ate the, that's when I had my pint and a half revolution. Okay.
Woo, boy, that sounds bussin'.
Yeah. If you can find anywhere that's doing that, I'm just saying try it, because I've seen it a few places. I think that's like the next like wave of like cool flavors of like, no, you know, the fucking cereal milk though, that with like a swirl of cereal.
That's the nostalgia I want. I'm tired of reboots. I'm tired of everyone using samples on music. I just want like snacks like that.
Right.
That's the nostalgia.
Like one that's like ice cream, but it's like it's the paper from a cupcake that you get from a kid's birthday in kindergarten.
Ooh.
Or it's them sugar cookies that you used to get on holidays. You know, the ones that sit in front of Walmart that's just sugar. Literally just a box of sugar.
Oh. But we need to go obscure. Like that's why I like cereal milk, cupcake paper.
Pizza grease paper plate. Like, Oof.
When you're kind of like, you know what? Like, I'm going to dip my crust in this pulled up oil right here.
I think I might just, you know, my elbow's a little ass. You might as well. Like, listen, you know what? If you can't admit your faults, then who the fuck are you? You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes you be seeing that pizza be greasy, and you're like, yo, let me pat it down the paper towel. Let people know that I'm trying to be healthier. But if there's a little grease on there and your elbows look a little, like they lacking, you can't cover them. Get a little greasy up in there.
There you go. Words of wisdom with Mama Dude and Jack.
That's survival tips for coronavirus. You're welcome.
Mama Dude, thank you so much for stopping by the Daily Zeitgeist, man. I really appreciate it. Happy Juneteenth, man. Though it's Monday, but we're recording this on Juneteenth, but we'll respect the sanctity of the holiday that apparently Donald Trump made famous. Would you get the fuck out of here?
Yo, he came through with the Kanye shit like, I made that bitch famous.
Did you?
What?
Wait, tell me y'all saw Melania's Juneteenth video from why she shoot that shit from? She was like, all right, y'all shoot me in this. I'm going to be in this building. Y'all shoot me from outside. Like,
wait, what? Is that the one she's being Angela Davis or something?
No, it's like she has a video where she's it almost looks like she's in like a Beyonce music video, like where they are shooting her from super far away. And she's like, hello, everybody. It is Juneteenth.
Oh, it's bad.
And
They shot that from 3 range, bro. Like, that shit is all the way back, and it looks mad wide. Whoever directed that was like, you know what? Let's get everything we can in this shot. And there's nothing in that room but Melania in a chair, and it does look wild formation. Like, it's wild, man. Yeah, exactly. Damn, bro. It's wild that, like, and also, like, the president's on Twitter, you know, out here just, like, shooting wild threats out to people. It's like, hey, just so you know, if you come to Tulsa on the 20th, it's like, it won't be like these protests and stuff. I'm like, bro, what are you going to do? Like,
I don't know. It's what those, you know, charged up white people do who think, you know, 900 Antifas are about to pull up. That's, like, the other information wave. It's so funny to watch, like, thank God my parents aren't on that Facebook shit. But there are so many of my friends who are like, I don't know what the fuck happened to like my mom or dad. Mom, where can people find you and follow you?
First off, stop looking for me. Second, you can find me on Twitter at Mamadou Ndiaye, MamouDoundiaye. And you can find me on Instagram at Mamadou About Nothing, MamouDou About Nothing. And I have a partnership with Color of Change, where we create a partnership where we are trying to find a way to talk about social justice through comedy. And that's going to be coming out soon. So look out for Bias for Us.
Cool. And what is it? Is there a tweet or any work of social media that you like that you want to shout out?
Oh, man. Listen, Alaskan Carl 1, you know who you are. I hope, like, we all became the nigga eating beans. So we feel your pain. Like, shout out to my man. Listen, oh, man. I read that shit when I was a teacher still, and I was like, damn, I love black teenagers so much.
Yeah.
And, protect them. Protect every single fucking black child out there because, yo, y'all are dumb funny.
Yeah, dude, the black Gen Z kids. Gen Z, it's like so funny. We're just saying, like, shout out to Gen Z, man. Like, even when you're roasting us, I'm like, this is fucking great. Like, I love it.
This is how white people feel at comedy shows, and black people be like, yeah white people.
We're like, they're like, yeah. I did tell a cop I didn't know I couldn't do that.
I am a Gryffindor.
Oh, man. Lacey, where can people find you and follow you? What's a tweet that you like?
Guys, as always, you can find me at DIVALACI, Diva Lacey, on all platforms. If you love scams, robbery, and fraud, listen to Scam Goddess. If you haven't listened, the most recent episode is me and Miles, and it's super fun. Shout out to Vulture for writing us up about it. And if you bank with TD Bank, I'm sorry. We dragged y'all a lot. And apparently, y'all love banks. And y'all need to let that go. We talked about capitalism. Let that bank love and go. That bank don't love you back.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
unless that bank is letting you ride shotgun and lean that front seat all the way back.
Right. Then maybe that bank do love you back.
We're talking about Fifth Third Bank, by the way.
Right.
A Fifth Third. I can't. And then
it's a real bank.
Which, if you guys have been listening this week, Steve Hernandez was on the show. But this is his pinned tweet, and I found it so funny. He said, damn, it wouldn't have even occurred to me to say "E tu, Brute." I would have just been screaming. The comments underneath this tweet are so funny because people are like, historians are debating whether he said "E tu, Brute" or
Fam. Yo, I love that people can like look at these big historical works of art and completely dismantle them with one sentence, under 280 characters. And it's so fucking funny to me.
Yeah, if I was being stabbed, I definitely wouldn't have any cutting remarks.
Also, hey, oh my God. Also, nigga, you in the middle of the forum and mad niggas just surrounding you and they ain't talking. It's the crabs meme. You're just like,
what do you do? Listen, so tweet I like. One is from at Hakeem Jefferson. This is about Juneteenth. It says, Juneteenth exists because slavery existed. People enslaved people. People bought and sold as property. Parents separated from children. Women raped, people brutally murdered, all in service of building empire. As we engage the smart reads about what today means, let us not forget this simple fact. And I think that's just very powerful. And that's what it is. That's what we're talking. It's because of how fucked up everything was that we're saying, oh, we are no longer in bondage. Really just simple. But yes, please remember that. That's what we're trying to escape.
I think that people mistake emancipation with true liberation and freedom.
Yeah, because we're not there yet.
We're not there. And people also look.
Let us go. And gave us nothing. Exactly.
And gave us nothing. They're like, all right, go over there. Go do. Yeah.
You worked for free your whole life, but now your freedom is your payment for all your work.
This big ass house you live in, that's off the strength of all the crops I was. No. Off you go.
You're welcome.
I can't read, but now you're good. Don't worry about it. You don't got to read. No one got to read. Yeah. In the future, no one reads.
Just what I was saying. Yeah. Like on Friday's episode, that's the secondary dehumanization that black people have to go through. Any colonized enslaved person has to go through is not just the first part of enslavement where your body and land and everything else is just desecrated. But then after the pursuit of dignity and liberation is the next fucking layer of trauma that people have to go through. That's what I think people need to realize. That's step two after bondage is then having to reclaim your humanity. That process is not finished.
Yeah. And I think that people just need to realize that like it wasn't like an unpaid internship. Like it was like chattel slavery. Like niggas was animals to people. Yeah. And then they were 3/5 of a person just to serve white voters. And now Electoral college, abolish it, burn it down like a target. I think people just need to understand like that's the truth of that sort of situation, and we gotta stop being so glib about it. And like when we see these slave movies, that shit can't just be like, oh wow, stop saying you're aware of slavery.
Glad that's
all
over.
Aware of slavery, like fix things. That reparation needs to happen.
Right. And my last tweet I like is that from @Armani_Bliss. It says, fake laughing with customers is a real skill. And that fucking hit. If anybody has had to fucking...
That was my fake laugh for customers.
Yeah. Oh, this one. Oh, wow.
Wow.
You are crazy. So what would you like to order? God.
Yeah, somebody take the Malbec away from her.
Oh, shit. You can find The Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter @DailyZeitgeist, on Instagram @TheDailyZeitgeist. We got a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. You know, where you can check that all out. And remember, if you like this, check out the Apple Podcasts, wherever you get podcasts. Just rate and review us. Please tell your friends about the show. It feels like a lot of you have been really vibing with the show in the last couple weeks. Really appreciate all the positive message that we receive from people. Please tell people, you know, like, this is what we're trying to do. This is why we're energized to do this show, is because we like to communicate and give everybody some perspective so we can all grow in as much as possible. Okay, so if you're curious about the song we're going to go right out on, I think I want to do one from Fela Kuti, who is, you know, the god MC of Afrobeat. And his album Zombie is, I think, one of a fantastic protest albums. And talking about the mindlessness of military forces to basically do whatever the bidding is of the hegemonic class, like zombies. You say, go there, go there. You shoot them, you shoot them. And this is from that album. I think most people know Zombie, but another track on there that I really love is called Mr. Follow Follow, which is about the same thing, about just the mindless allegiance some people have to certain things. It doesn't necessarily have to be to the military or whatever. Could be to ideology, things like that. And I think it's important that we also make sure we are not Mr. Follow Follows or Miss Follow Follows, or for non-binary people, we're just not follow follow people. You know what I mean? That we're cutting our own way and we have purpose. And that purpose is equality and inclusivity. Okay, well, listen to that. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back later today to tell you what's trending. Peace and blessings, y'all. Love you. Bye.
Luca, man, use your sense. Follow, follow. Follow, follow.
From Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
The following is a high five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again.
Platoon, present cell phone. High five.
High five.
Casino.
Casino.
Win at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
That world has eaten up and spit out a lot of young and attractive guys.
This is the story of one of fashion's dark secrets.
I was overwhelmed. Like, I had never seen anything like this.
At the height of Abercrombie & Fitch's success.
This was me being carefully manipulated.
Being lied to, tricked, and traded like a commodity.
Investigating allegations that would take me into a world of money, sex, and power. This is World of Secrets, Season 1, The Abercrombie Guys.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done, outfit stunner, and my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.